your little book, Violent Grace, Meeting Christ at the Cross, really focuses a lot on kind of the paradoxes of the gospel and thinking just even the cross in general. I mean, that we, it doesn't seem like it necessarily has such a prominent place as it maybe did a generation or so ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. The cross has been sort of emptied of its meaning and of its power. It's just a symbol. You know, it's something that, you know, rock stars, Madonna, you know, can wear a cross around her neck, and it's just sort of a fashion accessory. You know, I don't know what to do about that other than Paul says, you know, he wants to preach Jesus Christ and him crucified. I think maybe we need to live crucified lives, live lives that define what death to self looks like. You know, I don't really know, but I do wish we could bring meaning back to that symbol.
It does seem that the more that you read about it here in this season, and maybe you're in, you know, doing a devotional of some sort, a Lenten devotional, or just taking time to read the Gospels, I hope you are. But when you understand the suffering, I mean, the bruising and the wounding and the scourging, I mean, it's a pretty bloody account.
Well, Neil, I remember when I was in college, and, you know, you're a little bit arrogant, you know, when you're in college, and I would say, oh, you know, there were certainly people that suffered more physically than Jesus suffered. You know, that Jesus, his suffering was spiritual and emotional. You know, there have been people that have been tortured worse. But when I studied crucifixion and looked at, there's some articles in the Journal of American Medical Association, and there's some pretty good work that's been done on crucifixion. I'm not so sure that there isn't a more painful death than Jesus experienced. I mean, the scourging before the crucifixion, and Jesus may have been scourged twice. I think Pilate may have scourged him once just to satisfy the crowd. He was trying to get Jesus off. He was trying to get them to let Jesus go. And at one point at one point he scourges him just to appease the crowd. But then I think there's a chance, although some people say that he couldn't have been scourged twice because he couldn't have survived two scourgings. But I think there's a chance he might have been scourged twice because you're always scourged before you're crucified. The Romans always did that to hasten the deaths. And I think the record in the ancient literature is 8 days. There was a story of one man who actually survived hanging on the cross for 8 days. And, you know, we know that Pilate is surprised that Jesus has died, you know, in just a few hours. In fact, that's why he sends, in the Gospel of John, he sends two soldiers to find out if Jesus is really dead.
As they pierced his side rather than breaking his legs, right? That was a
right,
key part
right.
of it. Yeah.
They stabbed the thieves on either side of Jesus. And as I understand it, this was sort of a killing strike, you know, up through the rib cage up into the heart, but they break the legs of the two others because they're still alive, obviously. But Jesus is already dead, and they stab him through the heart just to make sure.
And at which point John says, "Right, this testimony is true, right? Like that. Apparently, that was an important part, I guess."
Well, and I think the testimony is true because I think the soldier who was there, I honestly believe that the centurion who was in charge of the crucifixion of Jesus became a believer. Because you have this odd little verse in John, you know, the one who has seen this, you know, testifies, and he knows that it was true. And I really do think that that's the testimony of this centurion who actually was responsible for crucifying Jesus. I'm fairly certain that he becomes a part of the early Christian community.
One of the things that caught my attention, I think, was looking through a Violent Grace again, was the root word for what excruciate comes out of crucifixion. Is that right?
Yeah, cross. That's the my mentor William Lane used to say. Yeah, that the echo of the agony of the cross is every time we use the word excruciating, the core, the root of that word cruxis or crucis is cross. And so the most painful, the most excruciating, you know, word that we have is connected back to the cross of Jesus.
Speaking of the cross, what's the "it" in "it is finished"?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question. I mean, theologically, I think the "it" is that redemptive suffering, that price that had to be paid for sin, that's the it. It's finished. What God had asked Jesus to endure to pay for the suffering for the sin of the world. I think that's the it, the cup that he'd been given to drink, that cup of suffering, which in the Garden of Gethsemane, he asked God to take away, but he, you know, basically comes back and says, not what I want, but you want what you want. So I think that's what the it is. The suffering he has endured has now paid for the sins of the world, for the sins of everyone, not just the sins of those who would accept him, but for the sins of the whole world, which is what gives Jesus the authority to judge the world, which, interestingly enough, he says he doesn't do. In John, he says, I haven't come to judge, I've come to save. So what I believe, Neil, is that we in essence judge ourselves. The price has been paid for the sins of the whole world. Anybody who's listening to the sound of my voice right now, no one goes to hell because of their sin. You go to hell for not accepting the only way to keep from going to hell. You go to hell for not accepting the sacrifice and the paid price that Jesus has provided on the cross. In essence, when Jesus pronounces the sentence in the book of Revelation, it's the sentence that we passed on ourselves by saying no to him. You know, a lot of people want to say now, ooh, God, you know, I don't believe in a God that would send anybody to hell. I don't believe in that God either. But I do believe in a God who loves us so much that he's made it. He's done everything he could possibly do to keep us from being separated from him. And I think that's what Easter's all about.
Just as we know that those familiar words from John 3:17 says, for God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him.
Absolutely. And again, there's this popular idea now that, you know, oh, God would never send anybody to hell. Well, obviously God is love, and he would never send anybody to hell. But the point is, when we say no to him, you know, we refuse the only bridge that we have to cross over. And God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish. God does not want us to perish, and he's done everything possible so that we can have life. He loves us so much he'd rather die than live without us.